Meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Rufik. Would you confirm that the recording has started?
So, thanks, everyone. Thank you for joining the NCAG policy call today. I know it's an unusual time, but since there is now the EPDP team call on Tuesday, it makes it difficult for us to schedule it in the usual day. So maybe for those who are attending for the first time, this call, it's monthly one, and usually we hold it prior to the General Stock Council meeting in a way to go through the council meeting agenda and to give an update to our members and also get any input and also try to discuss about any relevant policy topic. So this is the kind of call we have every month to discuss and try to share updates in addition to what you have in the mailing list. So it's a good opportunity for anyone to ask a question or request any clarification or share any thought. As usual, what we try to do is first we start with the General Stock Council meeting agenda and try to go in particular through the motions since we vote on them at the NCAG representative or the councillor, and so this is opportunity to get any voting instruction. And then we go to more policy update and try to get any update from working group, review teams, or about the public comments and so on. And at the end, we finish with any other relevant topic or, I would say, any other business. So we'll start first with the General Stock Council call agenda. And Mariam, please upload the agenda. So we can also share the link if it's more easy to check. Okay. You can have control so you can move the agenda on your side. I would be connected. So usually the agenda starts with several admin items. We don't need to cover them, but it's important for the councillor to pay attention, in particular the minutes and the project list, which give the latest status of all the activities, working group, and etc. that managed by the General Stock Council. Okay. After the administrative matters and the review of the project list, there is also the action items. There are the follow-up items from previous calls, and we try usually to see the status and to see what we did and what it's remained. So that's a tool for us and the council to monitor or track the activities too. So, okay, starting with the really first substantive agenda item is the consent agenda. As its name says, it's a consent, so we usually don't have any discussion, but if there is any councillor who wants that we move that to the usual agenda, it means that we have to discuss and to have more elaborated discussion. So in the way that maybe there is any concern, but it's really rare. And in this case, we have two motions. So the first one is to adopt the General Council response to the GAG communique. So this is the practice the General Council has for many years, which is to try to comment on the GAG communique, but only focusing on anything related to GNSO PDPs. And this is kind of feedback to the board, and we submit that or send that prior to the call between the ICANN board and the GAG, so we give input to the board, And usually we stick to the facts to remind what was done in terms of PDPs and so on. So this response from the council was prepared by a few volunteers, and here just we will kind of adopt it, so there was no objection previously in the matter. The second motion, it's also not controversial, is to confirm the Genesee representative to the Empowered Community Administration. And here usually it happens after every annual general meeting with the new council, is to decide who will be the representative to the Empowered Community Administration. And the choice is between among the members of the Genesee Council Leadership Team, which is composed of the Genesee Chair and the Genesee Council Vice Chair. And so we decided that the Genesee Chair should be the Genesee representative there. So there is no issue here, it's just something, you know, quite straightforward. So this is the context for the two motion. You can find more details in the links in the agenda, so you can read the motion. It's always a good opportunity, because you can find the whereas, which explains really the context and the background, and then the resolve it. So for those who are interested, you should you can take some time and read them, because it refers a lot of background material or documents and so on, and give you really quite a fair background about the reason or the rationale behind that motion. So, and also in the first one, you can find the Genesee Council response itself. So, it's short one, and but you can understand what the Genesee Council is sending to the board this time. Okay. Any question here or comment? Yes, Hamid, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Rafiq. This is Samer. You briefly went over the GNSO Council's project list and action items. I just wanted to flag that one of the action items is that there would be a follow-up discussion during the next council call on GDD Consensus Policy Implementation Framework. This is a framework that describes the process by which global domain divisions of ICANN implements consensus policies developed by the GNSO and adopted by the ICANN board. I had sent a note to the NCSG mailing list a couple of weeks ago about that, and about the role of the GNSO Council in monitoring what implementation review teams do in terms of how they implement consensus policies, and that the implementation review teams need to be accountable to the GNSO Council in terms of, you know, they need to implement the policies in the spirit by which they were developed. So this is something that I think is not very clear in the CPIF, in the Consensus Policy Implementation Framework. So I just wanted to flag that, and I think there's a deadline coming up soon on when the GNSO Council can submit feedback on the framework. And so if it's not going to come up during the council call, which I believe it will, I would appreciate if our councillors at least take this up on the council mailing list. Thank you. I'd also be happy to clarify if there are any questions on this issue. Thanks.
Thanks, Hamid. Yeah, it's going to it's planned in the agenda. It was in the beginning, but it was merged with the last agenda item about enter registrar transfer policy update. Since we have Brian from the GDD to give an update, so the the thought it was that we have this he gave the updates on the consensus policy implementation framework and the policy update at the same time. I know that's not optimal, but we did have a chance to talk about that matter, and the deadline for submitting comments from the council is the 10th of December, so I planned to write the comments when we are going to cover that agenda item. Okay. Sorry for the noise outside. Okay, so the next first agenda item. It's first is the council discussion on IGO and GO access to corrective rights protection mechanism. So for some context here, we have this working group which delivered its final report and recommendation in August, and so this is in the backlog for the council for a while now. Why we didn't act quickly is because we know there were about the some of the recommendation. I think the last one, and so we tried to, I mean, at least at the council leadership level, to see how what are the options and how we should deal with that, and also we try to give more background to the whole council so everyone. To get better understanding where with this situation. So in Barcelona meeting for the GNSO Council public meeting, we had the motion to vote on the final recommendation, but it was withdrawn prior to the meeting, and that because we got a letter from the RAD. I think it was to the leadership team. But so to the council itself. So the GAG raised a concern again there, and they were not happy that at least that's the GAG leadership, I think. They were not happy that we didn't have, I think, facilitated dialogue on the matter. So with the withdrawal of the motion, it's not even deferred. So if we want to vote again, it needs to be submitted again. So we are here in this situation at the council level to be careful in how to decide. So even if there are some concerns from they were unhappy because they thought that they give enough input to the working group regarding the recommendation. But the one issue is that the GAG or the some of the candidates didn't really participate directly in the process. They have their own GAG working group. They send letters and so on, but they don't think they participated directly in the working group. And understanding that the working group reviewed the input, and also the co-chairs of the working group tried many times to encourage the GAG members to participate and so on. So we are here in a situation for the GNSO Council as the manager of the policy to make a decision. And we have to be careful, that's at least from my perspective, is to not set any precedent. Because even if the GAG is happy and we kind of give in here and we decide to whatever the option, for example, to is the trying to maybe to change the recommendation, which is a practice we don't do anymore for many years, that's not really encouraged anymore, or to review to the working group, and so maybe it's not the best option, or to have this facilitated dialogue, even if we have what, I'm not sure about the name, there is a process or a kind of mechanism agreed between the GNSO and the GAC, in some time ago is to, in some cases, to have a discussion about PDPs. So it's possible to have that, but we need to be careful to not frame this as any kind of negotiation. The Genocide Council should not, kind of, I think, enter in any kind of negotiation about the recommendation. We are the manager of the process, but we should not really try to shape the substance of the recommendation. So this agenda item is to have the discussion at the council level. Thanks, Hamad. That's, yeah, the Genocide GAC early engagement. So we have this discussion, and we need to get all the, to prepare our decision. So I don't think, for example, that asking or like the rights protection mechanism to cover that or send back to the working group and so on are the best option. But we need also to acknowledge that the board and I think also the CEO, they are kind of they are concerned about the outcome of this and they are following this closely. So we need at least all councillors to review the documents, to pay attention to this discussion. And so we have, from NCAG standpoint, we need to make our position. As usually, we try to protect, the process, defend the process, because it's quite critical for us, and also to defend the limit of the genocide here in terms of GTRD policy making. I try here to give kind of quick update about the background and why we are in this situation. So I will try to compile the documents. There was some that sent in Barcelona meeting, I think by Ryan, I forget his name, but he's from WIPO, and he seems one of the person that from the GAC who is, was the kind of area. The person following this working group. So, from the Genocide Council leadership level, we will have a call on the matter this week prior to the council meeting, and we will have, because this one is for us to make a proposal and success path forward. So, saying that, I'm happy here to hear if there is any question or comment or any suggestion. I think it's, while this topic was in the council agenda for a while, but still I think it's still, everyone probably has, some issues to, get, the full image. So, yes. And thanks, Tom, for the comment. Yes, please go ahead.
Thanks, Rafiq, to Samer again. I just wanted to say what I believe I covered on last month's call. That this is this is a PDP working group that's been ongoing. It's worked for a number of years now, and its progress on this PDP has been on hold because of these inconsistencies between the working group recommendations and what the CAS has given as advice on this topic. But to me, the delay is not really justified, and I really think the GNSO needs to take swift action on this PDP. As Rafiq mentioned, there has been facilitated discussion involved with this PDP working group. There's also been legal advice provided on the extent to which there are applicable laws that govern IGO and IMGO protections, and the extent to which these protections are afforded to them on the same basis as they are in trademarks, for trademarks, for example, in use of a process like the UDRP. And the working group reached its decisions and submitted their recommendations to the GNSO Council. I believe that although the motion to adopt the working group reports and recommendations has been withdrawn, I believe the genus offering procedures require that notice not be delayed any further beyond one council meeting. So the council will need to deal with this eventually. And I also want to point out that, you know, working out inconsistencies between GAC advice and GNSO recommendations is not a prerequisite to these recommendations actually being sent to the board. We've had a number of these inconsistencies over the years, and the sad fact is that, you know, if the GAC doesn't get what it wants from the GNSO, it more than likely will get what it wants from the ICANN board, when the ICANN board is considering these recommendations. But the GNSO needs to do its job, I think, in this respect. And you know, like I said, this working group's been going on for years, I think since 2013 or 14. So, I think it might be a good idea for the GNSO council to, you know, stand by the working group that it chartered and adopt its recommendations as soon as possible. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Tamar. I think that the point is really that we have to protect the process here. It's not to, I mean, the goal should not be to accommodate any group, even if it's the GAC, and they have some leverage by going directly to the board, maybe using the GAC advice, but they cannot do that for now. The GNSO Council approved the recommendation that goes to the board, so the board may will use its own process, probably like having public comment and so on, if they have a GAC advice, they have to deal with that. So the question is, should we as a council deal with that, or just let's throw it to the board and let the ICANN board have some fun with the GAC? So, yeah, so, I mean, it's a discussion item, but really I advise everyone to check the background and the material, so to have a good understanding of what we are talking about. And it's really, it's a matter of process, and to avoid setting any precedent that will be not good for us in the future. We need really to be careful here, because if we go in this path, that will haunt us later on. Okay, any question, comment here? Okay, you don't see any. So we'll go to the next agenda item. So it's about the council update about EPDP. So for this one, we'll discuss about the EPDP in more details and dedicated agenda items. So I want to say, let's not go into substantive discussion about the EPDP for now. We will cover that later, and we will have plenty of time to do so. But just here to the usual update from GNSO Council Liaison to the APDP, that's me. And for this time, also the chair of the APDP team was invited. And as usual here, I give an update about the status of the work in the EPDP team, and only try to raise if there is any issue or concern for the GNSO Council as a policy manager. So it's not necessarily about the substance, but really if there is any issue with regard, for example, the charter, or any problem faced by the EPDP team, in interpreting the question from the council one. And it's also a good opportunity for the GNSO council to ask the question and pay attention what's going on there. And to be honest, I think it's really for the first time that the Chenasaw Council is quite, councillors are kind of paying attention to that level of details for a PDP. So usually we have updates from working groups and so on, but I think for this EPP, because all the challenges regarding the timeline and the need to deliver within the by the deadline, push all the council to follow closely this effort, because the success of the EPDP team is quite important for the legitimacy of the GNSO in terms of GTRD policy making. So I'm just saying that's regular or placeholder in the council agenda for the last month, and for myself, I'm preparing for that one, and I'm expecting some questions. I hope that I can answer them fairly, but yeah, let's see. Okay, any question or comment? And again, we will cover the EPDP in details later on after we finish with this agenda. Okay, I don't see any comment or question. Can move to the next one. So this is another the council discussion, and this is about ICANN reserve fund. So in terms of background here, this has come up, I think, during the Barcelona meeting, and the Genesso Council public meeting. It's that we heard, or we were informed that the board was going to approve a resolution about getting some funds, if I can say that, from the auction proceeds to replenish partly the ICANN reserve fund. So the concern here was that we have a cross-community working group for the auction proceeds, working on the framework and how to disburse the auction proceeds and how to use that for within the ICANN mission and maybe to find some projects and so on. And I think I can understand the intent from the ICANN board, because we have this issue with the reserve fund with the decreasing income for the ICANN from the domain fees and so on, to ensure that we have the reserve fund replenished. But some people raised a concern, and it's more here, I think the discussion is what is the role of the GNSO Council in the matter. In our situation post stewardship transition, the council has kind of, I think, the GNSO and the council has much more say with regard to the ICANN budget and operating plan, and so something like the reserve fund. But still, from the council standpoint or perspective, we are trying to see how we can, what can be our role here, should we have anything to say, and so on. So it's more like a discussion here. I think there are some groups, they have a lot of concerns, but I don't think we are necessarily aligned with them from NCHG. But I think it's a matter for discussion anyway, and it's important to maybe to make our position on the matter and to see if we need to do anything. So, any question or comment on this one? It's not really policy per se, but it's about something related, I think, to an operation to some extent. Okay. Any question or comment? hope that at least you can hear me. Oh, hearing none, I think we can move to the next agenda item. This is again a council discussion. It's about the inter-registrar transfer policy status report. So here it's we have a policy that is implemented for a while now, and when we got I think it's several policy. I mean, it's it was, I think, divided in several policy A, B, something, several letter, I forget how many, but we have this IRTP. And what happened is that the council at that time, when approved the recommendation, it asked that it needs to review the policy after implementation in order to evaluate effectiveness. And it's this is something new, I think, for the GNSO Council, is to review the policy after they were implemented and acted. So this is will come, I think, for with the other policy in near future. And as Zahmer raised it before, we have the consensus policy implementation framework, and this is part of it. So under this agenda item, we will try to cover the two topics, the framework itself and this status, policy status report on the IRTP. One information that is there is the public comment on this policy status report, but just a caveat, it's not usual public comment, and that's why we don't have anyone working to draft the comments from NCSG, because what is happening is that what's happening is the ICANN.org, the staff are collecting data using a survey targeting registrar and any registrant that had experience with domain transfer. So it's not really, they are not looking for comments from stakeholder group constituency, but from people who have experience with this policy in practice. So for those, I mean, who had any time to do some domain transfer, that's a good opportunity to share your experience in the survey, because that report will be updated, and then it will be for GNSO Council consideration. So what we will get here is some updates from GDD. It also we discuss about consensus policy implementation from framework. And as Omar raised, the one issue is really about the implementation review team. So as you may know, the PDP has several phases and milestones. From our perspective, we usually really focus about the policy making. So when we have the charting for the PDP, and so starting the process itself, and then the working group, and when we try to cover the public comment and so on. But then there is the implementation phase, and there are many things that can happen there, but I don't think we did a good job on that front, and it's because it's not that easy, and I think after enough time for many people spend in the working group, it's not that easy just to go to continue in the implementation review team. And so I think it's one area at least for us to improve. But in general, for the GNSO Council, so we have to maybe to do better in terms of IRT, and the way to ensure that the policy is implemented, I mean, the implementation really respecting what the recommendation says, and to avoid a situation that when there are any issues, they try to rewrite the policy and arguing that's an implementation matter. So this is one area we have to and this is, I think, what we will try to write during the council meeting. Okay. Any question or comment on this one? I see in the chat you can be discussing about the APDP update, but I hope that you have any question or comment on this one about the RTP's policy status report and consensus policy implementation framework. I think in general we, for this year, since the strategic meeting, we are really, really stressing the role of all these to working group, but I think also to the IRT, and that we have to pay more attention there and to empower our liaison to do better in terms of reporting to the council and to see how we can improve their role and their work there. So this is something we have to push or to do better in future. Okay. Yes, Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, Rafiq. Can you hear me? Can everybody hear me? I'm going to go with a yes. Okay, thanks. So I just wanted to echo what you were saying about implementation review teams and the danger. I don't know about this particular one, but we are increasingly seeing implementation review teams engaged in policy rewrites. In the review of all rights protection mechanisms, we actually see consensus policy rewritten by the implementation review team, changed 180 degrees where it shouldn't be. Proxy privacy, the same thing was about to happen before it went all before it went dark. It's the plug's been pulled on the proxy privacy implementation review team for a while until the EPDP finishes its work. So I don't know how the council can oversee this more closely, but it's a real problem. And in fact, it's so flagrant that the subsequent procedures working group is actually writing it in, that their implementation review team, their standing implementation review team will actually write policy for the future, the upcoming applicant guidebook. If there are policy problems, if there are policy gaps, the implementation review team is going to write it rather than coming back to us. So ICANN's in a slide on this one, and if there's a way to stop that slide and say, no, implementation review team is a technical concept. When you implement something as a technologist, as a lawyer you can change it, but as a technologist you can't. You have to implement what you've been given, the guidelines, the policy you've been given. And I flag this. This is a huge problem, guys, and it's about to get worse.
Thanks, Kathy. I think one tool we have, I think the council needs to use more and better, is the use of for the Proxy and Privacy Accreditation Service. In fact, we heard a lot from the liaison, who is Darcy. She writes it many times, concern and issues about what's going on there, and her issues with, it's not easy for her, to work with. Sometimes the GDD representative. So I think one way also is really to, we need to pay attention and to review that the consensus policy implementation framework, and in particular the language. I know that the contracted party, they submitted several comments on that one, and also I think PC and IPC. So, and not all of their comments were considered. So we have maybe to keep pushing on that front. So, and I think the council needs maybe to, in terms of managing the effort, while we are tracking for the PDP, it's started till it's implemented, and now we have to review the policy. That's what we are saying. But still, I don't think we are doing a good job in terms of oversight after we finish, when we approve the recommendation. I think that with the feeling, we deliver the policy recommendation and the our job is done, but the implementation is just another round when a lot of things can happen. So we have to find a better way how to do things. The liaison is one step, but I think also how we populate this IRT. Because one thing is, usually the IRT are supposed to be composed of those who were in the working group, and with the PDP effort that now taking many years, I think it's it's even becoming more harder to keep having people to join IRT and to continue that work. So we need to find a holistic solution. It's not just, cannot be just fixes here or there or some workarounds. We need to think the whole thing. Any comment or question here? See none, and I see. Oh, Kathy?
Yeah, Ruffy, new hand. I was going to type, but I can talk faster than I type. To what Amr said, and I agree, it would be nice if we could have people in the implementation review teams, but we're spread pretty thin on the policy side. So part of my fear is that because we're not there in the implementation review teams, that absence is being taken advantage of. But if an implementation review team actually did what it was supposed to do, which is merely implement on a technical level the policy that's already been negotiated over months, years, then we wouldn't have to be there. We'd just have to be supervising. The council would get to supervise. So it's a problem because I don't think we're ever going to have the resources to be on all the implementation review teams actively. But, again, we shouldn't have to be there if they did, if they stuck very narrowly to what their job was. So I'm not sure what to do with that catch-22, but I thought I'd share it. Thanks.
Happy to see there are some interaction. I have to be connected about this. Yes, there are several questions, and so we need to figure out how we can improve at least our presence as NCAG, but also from the Geneso itself. So it's a different pressure and so on. So I think it's a kind of how we are managing the whole process from the beginning to the end, and not just focusing on the policy recommendations. So, yeah, this is maybe one task for the policy committee, so we should at least ensure that we have representation in all IRT in the same way. We have to improve our presence in the working group. So maybe you focus it a little bit more on public comments, exactly, but here we have to ensure that we have a presence during the whole PDP process, from when we start with the issue report, I think charter till it's the implementation. Okay, I think we covered well this topic, and we got some comments that we should share during the council call. We covered all the substantive agenda items. What is remaining here is just the other business. It's mostly some not policy matters. One is the update of the council strategic planning session that will happen in LA. So this is the second time we'll have this meeting, and the council leadership team is working on the agenda and preparing the discussion for the 3 days meeting in LA. The second one is to that we have to make an appointment from the GNSO to the fellowship selection committee in permanent basis. For now, we have an interim or a temporary representative to that fellowship selection committee, and it's Heather Forrest, who was the GNSO chair. So this is just a topic we need to decide, and probably this will go to the selection standing committee to make an appointment, or other option just to be can ask Heather to continue for the rest of the year, and after that we can figure out the process, how we can get the representation from the GNSO and the selection committee. Okay, so let's move to our agenda, NCAG call agenda. Madam, can you please move back to the first agenda? Okay, so we covered the council agenda, and we can move now to the main part of our call, which is the policy update, and we will start first with the EPDP discussion. So first we got that update from NCAG representative to the EPDP, and you can see here the email sent to the list. Hope that everyone had chance to read that update and to get sense what's going on there. And also we have the public comment for the initial report from the EPDP team. I think it was a huge challenge to get initial report within less than 4 months. I don't think that happened before, so probably we broke some record here. But this is just really the first step. I think what's remaining is even more challenging is to get the final report after we still have, the EPDP team still had to deliberate in some outstanding items that we didn't finalize yet, and then how to when we get the public comment input, how to get that included in the final report and the finalize the recommendation and get consensus around them, and that should be done in just 2 months. So it's even more challenging 2 months, which we have in the middle the winter holiday, so there are more work to be done here. For the public comment, I think our public comment, guys, let's go to the APDP, please. I know that the fellowship committee is important, but we can follow up later on that one. So we have the public comment, and I know that our NCAG representative, they are starting to drafting the response, and there is possibility to have volunteers to join the effort and help them on drafting NCAG comment. We have to act quickly because there won't be any extension for the public comment, at least for now. So, okay. So I think that's it from my side, but I think it's better to hear from the representative if they want to share any update or comment or anything that's relevant, or they need an input from the members. And you can move, you can scroll down or up the document, and I think one useful part is the table with the recommendation and what is proposed as NCAG position. That gives you some the representative, what you think that we should support or not with regard to the recommendation. Okay. So anyone want to volunteer to give update on this? Okay. Mariam, can you please give everyone the ability to scroll so they can go through the document.
Thanks. This is Amr. I don't really want to give a complete briefing or update on the EPDP team's work. I think Aidan did that very well in his briefing, which he sent to the NCSG mailing list last Thursday and is on the screen now. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, documents that are being displayed in the Adobe Connect room can be downloaded directly from the room. That's using the drop-down menu in the top right corner of the window where the document is being displayed. So if you haven't seen Aiden's email in your inbox, you can download it directly right now. I was going to raise one point, but before I get to that, I see that Kathy put a question in the chat, so I'll try to address that as well. Kathy's asking about, you know, the status of the discussion regarding the distinction between individual registrants and legal registrants. So, yeah, this is an ongoing issue. For those of you who are not aware of the work of the EPDP or the Expedited Policy Development Process, this is basically a policy development process that is meant to bring domain name registration data policies in line with EU's General Data Protection Regulation, which came into effect in May of this year. And so we're basically reviewing, the EPDP team is reviewing a ton of processing activities and, you know, what their legal basis is, who the data processors and data controllers are for each one of those, and you know, what are the rights of the data subjects in terms of GDPR, and in some other instances, the topic of other privacy and data protection laws also comes up. But one of the things with GDPR is that it protects personal information of natural persons, which can be referred to as individual registrants in the ICANN context, but does not cover protection for the personal information of legal persons, which Kathy referred to here as legal registrants. The EPDP team's been engaged on this issue for a couple of months now. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but the EPDP actually began just the beginning of August of this year, and although it's only been doing its work for a few months, it feels like a lot longer. But the distinction between natural persons and legal persons and how their personal data is handled or processed is something that has been an ongoing and very hot debate on the EPDP. Right now, there are some recommendations. There is a recommendation in the report to deal with this, but there is still no consensus on the EPDP team in terms of, you know, what the EPDP will recommend in its final report. There are sharp divisions between different groups, like the non-commercial stakeholder group, the contracted parties, and the internet service providers and connectivity providers, constituency of the commercial stakeholder group on one side, and on the other you have the large advisory committee, the governmental advisory committee, the intellectual property constituency and business constituency, as well as the security and stability advisory committee on the other. And basically those parties are seeking to have policy recommendations where a distinction would be made between, in terms of how the personal information of legal persons and natural persons are treated, while we and the groups who are aligned with us on this are arguing that the distinction not be made, for many reasons. First, that, you know, it's very difficult to hold an individual registrant accountable for what kind of information they place in the registration data. It might not be very clear to them, what the meaning of a distinction between a legal person and a natural person is. It's very easy for mistakes to be made. Also, from an implementation perspective, it's basically technically and financially not feasible to make this distinction on a large scale when dealing with all the GTLD registry operators, the ICANN accredited registrars, and all their resellers, which, if I'm not mistaken, number in the millions around the globe. And you know, the implementation measures from a technical perspective, like I said, are extremely difficult. But what is even more difficult would probably be the financial burden in terms of implementing a recommendation to that effect that makes the distinction. and these financial costs would ultimately be borne by domain name registrants who would need to pay for those, even if indirectly. So the discussion is ongoing. It's clear that there is a legal basis to make the distinction, but just because there is that legal basis exists does not mean that we are required to make it. What we are required to do, as an ICANN community developing a policy, is to make sure that domain name registration data policies are compliant with GDPR. And so this distinction isn't required to achieve that compliance. So this is basically where we stand right now in this argument. It's a bit of a stalemate. This is one of the very contentious battlefields in terms of the trench warfare going on the EPP team. There's a couple of other ones, but this is one of the big ones. Surely if there are any changes or updates to this topic, we'd be happy to update the NCSG membership, especially those who are interested. But in the meantime, please do look at the initial report. It's really, really long, but there's an overview of the recommendations at the beginning of the report that you can go through. And if you find any of those interesting, or if you want to know more about any one of those, you can you can skip further down in the report where the individual arguments for or against any of the given recommendations are clarified. And that sort of, I'll try to seg into another topic that I wanted to point out very quickly as well in the report that might be of interest to some of our members, is that there are three recommendations in the report. I believe there are 15, 16, and 17 that deal with trademark issues and RPMs specifically, mainly the UDRP and URS, the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Process, and the Uniform, I don't recall what the URS stands for right now. So there are three recommendations there that deal with those. So folks who are involved in the RPMs review PDP working group should probably take a look at those, and we plan on starting to draft our own comment on this issue and on all of these recommendations. So it would be great if folks can weigh in. I'm happy to answer any questions. There are a few other NCSG representatives on the PDP team who are also on this call, and please weigh in as well if you feel like you would need to or would like to. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Armin, for this brief update. I see Kathy is in the queue. I think she wants to ask a question here. Yes, Kathy, please go ahead.
Actually, I'm happy to wait for the invitation Armin just gave if any of the other EPDP members want to follow up to his excellent explanation discussion. I'm happy to wait on my question.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Checking Howard in and attending the call, so don't want to put anyone on the spot. So anyone want to jump in here? It's a good opportunity. But okay. So, we have Aiden, but I think that he's happy to hear from you first, Kathy. Kathy, go ahead.
Okay, great. Thanks, Rafiq. Just checking, I'm off mute. So first, thank you to Amr. And what happened in Barcelona was that the meetings of the EPDP were often in conflict with the meetings of some of the PDPs. And so, trying to make sure different things were covered so that we could, as a stakeholder group, be in different places at once. So I really, really appreciate the discussion and background. What I wanted to do is lay out a complicating factor of the GDPR and then see if our EPDP members or anyone would like more data about it. And that's that it's not as simple as personal data versus legal data. And I can't tell you the amount of time I spent with Peter Kimpian on this. He's the Council of Europe Data Protection Unit representative who comes to many ICANN meetings and helps set up our high-level meeting with the data protection commissioners in Copenhagen. So first, this is not natural persons itself is not a definition that's intuitively obvious to American intellectual property attorneys. And here's why. It's anything that identifies a person, and that could be their corporate address. So if their name and their corporate address are on a domain name registration for a legal entity, it's still personally identifiable information. It's still personal data. So in the United States, we think of a legal contact as being Kathy Kleiman, human relations representative for XYZ company. That is personal data under the GDPR. Now, to make it more complicated, it's not just personal data that is protected by the GDPR. It's sensitive data. And this is a different part of the GDPR that no one refers to. And, again, I'm happy to provide materials. That's one of the reasons I'm raising it on this call. But sensitive data involves data that's involved with things involving religion, ethnicity, gender, and sexuality. So think about the contact of an LGBTQ organization, a legal organization, say it's incorporated because it needs insurance for a building. And that the contact for that organization is probably revealing their gender and in a way that could be very dangerous in certain countries. That information is protected under the GDPR. So it's called sensitive data. So, it's not just personal data, it's sensitive data. Similarly, for representatives of mosques, synagogues, and churches, religious data is protected. So it goes far beyond personal data. It makes the choice that Amr was talking about, that distinction between legal entities and what's not protected under GDPR and personal entities and what is protected, very complicated. Much more complicated than it was before because lots and lots and lots of legal entities and their representatives are now protected. But I wanted to know whether this is something that's been discussed by the EPDP, and if not, whether you'd like more information on it because it is one of the areas people are just beginning to learn about under GDPR. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. So we have Amr and Aidan in the queue. Amr, please go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Rafiq, and thanks for that, Kathy. Just to note real quick that, you know, in the course of the discussions on legal versus natural persons on the EPDP, the issue of, you know, at-risk groups in general has brought up a number of times, maybe not so much in the context of what sensitive data is and how that should be treated under GDPR. I guess technically speaking, sensitive data as it is defined in the GDPR and as Kathy has rightly pointed out, you know, includes things like ethnicity, religious, religion, a number of different other issues, including, for example, like health information. Sensitive data per se is not data that is included in domain name registration data. But that does not take away from the fact that, you know, there are at-risk groups that could be harmed potentially because their registration data is not redacted in the WHOIS. Simply because the domain name was registered by a legal person instead of a natural person. But what I believe is a more feasible way of dealing with this issue is really making the distinction because, again, GDPR doesn't distinguish between legal persons and natural persons. What it does distinguish between is personal information of legal persons versus personal information of natural persons. So if you're a legal entity that is registering a domain name, that doesn't mean that there isn't that personal information of a natural person is not included in the domain name registration data. You know, if you're a legal person, so the registered name holder is listed as a legal person, but then the contact information for that legal person is an individual's email address that might either identify the natural person involved or make the natural person more identifiable. And that's really the angle we've been trying to take. Because again, let's remember here, the purpose of this ePDP is not to rehash all registration data service policy issues. It's really just to make sure that the existing policies become compliant with GDPR. So there's a whole ton of stuff that, for example, the RDS PDP was meant to address that isn't going to be addressed by this ePDP. That needs to be deferred to another policy process. So in terms of the distinction we're talking about between legal and natural person, again, the focus is on the personal information of natural persons and how those might still be present and publicly published in the RDS or in the WHOIS, even though the registered name holder is a legal person. So working that out is a difficult and tricky thing to do, especially from an implementation perspective. And, of course, we have our own special interests involved. Every stakeholder group has their own special interest. Ours is privacy, not just for individuals, but also for organizations, especially the types of organizations Kathy was referring to. But again, we need to really make sure that our arguments on the ePDP are very targeted towards how to make RDS policy compliant with GDPR. And unfortunately, sort of making these sorts of distinctions sometimes go beyond that scope, even if just slightly. But we do believe that we have a proper legal standing in terms of you know, making sure we get what we need on this issue. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Tama. We have Aiden and then Kathy. Aiden?
Thanks, Rafiq. Hi, everyone. This is Aiden Guadaline. Emma has just offered a very comprehensive response. Well, we'll try not to touch upon anything that he just mentioned. But I did want to address Kathy's point, which is a good one, and I did want to stress that identifiability is something that we have as the MCHD advanced within the EPDP team. We have highlighted how the information of a legal person can also be at times the personal information of a natural person, particularly if you're talking about a small home-based business or something of a similar nature. Unfortunately, while there has been that has been something that we have put forward and that the contracted parties have put forward, it has not necessarily been something that has been taken forward by the working group as a whole. The working group does not have, in my opinion at least, the strongest leadership. And sometimes arguments can be raised and the chair is not able to summarize them, or he is not not able to address competing arguments. Everything is treated the same. He cannot put forward any kind of value judgment to determine whether something is supported by evidence versus whether something is an opinion. Stephanie has attempted to get a legal coach or some external legal advice, but nothing has come of that. So while the MCHG has certainly noted that within the GDPR and indeed within the previous, the 1995 directive that the European Union had, that there is a focus on not just what is personal information, but information that can lead to the identifiability of the natural person. Sadly, we haven't gotten too far with that. And even in support of our claims, we've cited opinions, like Opinion 4 from 2007 of the Article 29 Data Protection Working Group, within which it actually advises that when information about a legal person is also considered as relating to a natural person, it should be viewed as personal data, and the data protection rule should apply. But again, we have extremely deep leadership in this working group, and it doesn't matter how much credibility a source has if it doesn't really, unless every single member of the working group is putting forward the same perspective, it's just not taken forward. We've also noticed that the GDPR doesn't require that you distinguish between a natural and legal person. That is simply the desired view of certain stakeholders. And some NCHG members have certainly noted that laws and regulations other than the GDPR in other jurisdictions guarantee the rights of individuals associated with entities, particularly with the national constitutions or the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, which protects legal entities such as religious groups, as well as individuals to protection. But I'd encourage you to listen into a recording of one of the calls one day, and I think if you hear how the chair moderates the working group, you'll realize why we haven't made much progress. We have had some very good progress when we brought in external facilitators, but I suspect they're quite expensive, so we haven't been able to use that services as much anymore as we could in weeks gone past. I'll leave my comments there. Thanks.
Thanks, Aiden. I don't see anyone in the queue, but I'm not sure if there are any other question or comments on this. So we got this update, and we have also the update in the list. So if there are people want to follow up there, that's a good opportunity. Continue the discussion there. But if you still have any question or comment, you can do it during this call. So. Okay. Let's see here. We covered fairly the topic for now, but we will follow up anyway in the discussion list, and hopefully when the draft comment is ready, that will be shared in the mailing list, and everyone can review and comment. Okay, so the next. Agenda item is can you come back to the first slide, please? Okay, thank you. So we had the CPDP discussion. So the next one is usual the PDP and review teams update. I think in terms of preview teams, what we have now is who is review team. We got that initial report a few weeks ago, and we could submit our comments. We have Tiffany there. I don't see her. So. The other review team is the SSR2. The consumer choice and computation, they already finished their work, and the final report is public comment initiated by the board. So no so much to say there. The ATRT3 is supposed to start in January, and in fact the GENASO Council is doing electronic vote for the state of nominated representative from the GNSO to ATRP, and one of them, in, among the three guaranteed seats we have, Wolfgang Landfester from NCHG there. So, that's a quick update from my, I, as far as I know about the review team. So if anyone heard anything relevant they want to, if you want to share, please do so. Otherwise, we can go to the PDP working group. So we have the first one, the subsequent, the UCTRD subsequent procedure. They, we had the initial report in September. We submitted our comment, and my understanding that working group is working on reviewing the comment and so on. So this is something that we have to pay attention. But they also published a supplementary report on some overreaching area. They're asking input for, and we have already a drafting team working on NCHG comment to cover that. But if there is anyone in the subsequent procedure working group who wants to give an update or share anything, please do so. Okay, so I think what Zana is saying, she cannot raise her hand in Adobe Connect, but she want, I mean, can you confirm that you wanted to be in the queue for Zana or not? In the meantime, I see Kathy is in the queue. Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi. This is Kathy. So first, great thanks to Amar and Aidan. It was a really valuable discussion, and I've got some materials to follow up with EPDP. But switching to Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group, a quick update, and I invite Martin and anyone else who's participating to add. But we are now rolling back the clock 1 year, which is very unusual. We took a break from the trademark clearinghouse issues, the sunrise period, trademark claims, trademark clearinghouse provider, and the rules for running the trademark clearinghouse database. So all the rules for kind of the new GTLDs. We took a break to look at the uniform rapid suspension while we were gathering data, which the council gave us a grant to do, so we appreciate that. So we gathered the data on the trademark clearinghouse. We went out to registries, registrars, trademark owners and registrants and potential registrants and gathered a bunch of data, and we have that back now. So we've finished our uniform rapid suspension review, and we're rolling back the clock a year to look at where we were on the trademark clearinghouse, and that's really hard. So it's really hard to go back to what you were doing a year ago in a large working PDP working group. But that's where we are, and if anybody has any questions about that, give me a yell, because we're putting together long timelines and massive document lists. But that's about it. And if anybody wants to join the RPM working group, now's a good time to do it.
Thanks, Kathy. So I think you covered the rights protection mechanism, but just a thought that anyone wanted to give any update on subsequent procedure, but it's not the case. I think the same for track 5 regarding GMS. So we have Amar in the queue. Amar, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Rafiq. This is Amar, and I just had sort of like a question or possibly just a comment to Kathy and Martin and anyone else involved with the RPM's review PDP. I had mentioned that there were a few recommendations coming out of the EPD team on RPMs, and one of them concerns, you know, how registrant data is processed within the course of a UDRP or URS taking place. So the way the current policies are worded, disclosure of registered name holder registration data is not actually required until a UDRP or URS is officially underway. And this has been something we've been trying to deal with, and you know, we've been trying to make sure that remains the case in terms of what the EPDP team is doing. But of course, you know, stakeholders who are frequent users of these processes would like to, you know, have access to registration data prior to a process like the UDRP or URS being officially initiated. And their reason for doing this is one, so that they could include this information in the complaint that they submit, and two is because, you know, it's just what they've been used to. You know, they've had access to this publicly published information in the past. Although now this doesn't seem to be a legal sort of a way to do this right now. Yeah, one of the concerns that we've had, apart from being compliant with GDPR in terms of making sure this data is redacted and not disclosed unless there is a legitimate reason for doing so that is grounded in some sort of a lawful basis, one of the concerns that we've had and expressed on the EPDP is, you know, if the UDRP or the URS processes allow for disclosure of nameholder registration data prior to the process being officially initiated, is that, you know, it provides for a phishing sort of expedition for anyone to sort of say, oh, I need access to this data because I'm thinking about, you know, submitting a UDRP complaint or a URS complaint, and I haven't really decided yet, but I'm thinking about it, but I need to check the registration data before I do so. And then we're obviously very opposed to this. So this is something that is coming out of the EPDP team and its recommendations. It's in the initial report. We need to work it out before we get to the final report. But my question to Kathy and Martin is, have you guys on the RPM's review taken these issues into consideration or not? And if not, why not? And do you plan on tackling these issues in the coming months while you're reviewing the UDRP and URS? Thank you.
Okay,
so this is Kathy. The answer is no and yes. No, we are not coming up with we've finished our URS review, and we're done with that, in part because we're waiting for you, and the revisions to the working group feels very deferential to the EPDP. We can't respond to rules we don't know, and that's your bailiwick on the EPDP is to create the new rules for the UDRP and URS. That said, I'm really glad personally that you're thinking so much about it. I'm happy to help. What we did do was recognize that even though the rules of the UDRP and the URS, and of course the rules of the UDRP were written 20 years ago, but they say that a complainant has to file a UDRP and URS action with the name of the registrant and with, you know, as much contact information data as they have about the registrant. And with the redacted data, there is not much there. And so what we did was we created, as an RPM working group, we've created recommendations to go out, tentative recommendations to go out in our initial report in the spring that allow for something that we call a John Doe complaint, which is when you're filing against someone who you don't know who they are, so somebody who you believe defamed you in a chat room, or now in this case, a domain name registrant who you believe is engaged in trademark infringement of the domain name. And you don't know who they are, you file a John Doe complaint and say, I don't know who they are, but here's the rest of the complaint. Here's the allegation that I have against them. Please fill in the information. And so you're going to WIPO or the forum, previously called NAF, or the other groups that handle these disputes, and you're saying, you guys find out who the registrant is. And in this case, what we found in our investigation, the RPM working group, is that the registrars will turn over the data about the registrant to WIPO or the forum for a specific complaint. And from my perspective, and I'm happy to talk about it, but this seemed to make sense because here now you have a balance of interest. Because you want the registrant to know that there's something, that there's a complaint pending against their domain name, so they have the opportunity to respond. So let's say they think that the allegation that there is no trademark infringement, they have every right to use this generic word. Plus, it's their, it's all their websites and listservs and emails are hanging off this domain name. So they want to be able to defend it. So we want the complainant to know about the pending domain name dispute. So the balance seems to be fair in that case. What worries me is what Amr mentioned, this ability that the intellectual property owners, some of them say they want, which is just to go digging in the who is and kind of find out before they file a complaint to find out the other 100 domain names the registrant might have or that they don't have 100 domain names, kind of these broad general searches ahead of time that they've gotten so used to and that they don't have now. But in terms of a specific complaint, we are finding that the registrars are turning over the data to WIPO and NAF and that the registrants are being notified. So the only thing involved is a little tweak to some of the time frames to make sure the registrant has enough time to respond. We're working on time frames a little bit so that the short period of time to respond isn't cut off for some of this disclosure timing. I don't know if any of that makes sense. I'll be happy to provide more in writing if it's useful. But, Amr, yeah, we're trying to do some of this, but we're also being very deferential to the EPDP because you guys are making the overall rules, which we'll have to respond to. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Kathy. That's good to have this to sync up with what's going on in EPDP and what may impact the RPM work to some extent. So I think we already got everything for RPM and also for subsequent procedure in the chat. So encouraging more people to join the working group with regard to the review of the comment, and still there are a lot of work to be done there till the final report. So with regard to working group, I think that's it. We don't have any more of the RDS that was terminated. And so we can go to, and I think also I gave some quick update on the review teams, but just it's really in terms of process. So with regard to substance of the work and review teams, so if anyone has an update, please feel free to share. So let's go to the public comment status. And I think some of them were covered, but let me summarize quickly the status. So we have the EPDP comment that was just opened a few days ago, and we have our representative to work on that. And hopefully they can share a draft as soon as possible. We have another one that also for a short period, that's the proposed consensus policy regarding the Red Cross names. So this is from the board. We have, I think, two or three volunteers. I will follow up with them, and I think I will include also Farzana on this, since she drafted the previous comment, so if she can help them on this. We have, I think, already give some update about the supplemental initial report and new GTLD procedure for overarching issues. We have already drafting team. They shall start working on it. They have short time to deliver, so the deadline is the 20th of December. We have also the public comment on the ESSEC final report. The draft was already shared by Thompson, and deadline is the 3rd of December, so that's just next week. I think we don't have much to say there, because my understanding from Thompson is that several of our comments were already included, and there is nothing really controversial there. So that should be a fairly simple comment. So what we have really as urgent, and I left that till at the end, so we can have some time to discuss about. It's the initial report on auction and the Competition Consumer Trust and Consumer Choice Review Team final report. So the two, we have the two draft comments that were shared a while ago for input. and we need to finalize them. There are some still some pending questions and comments. We have to by the 27th of November, so just it's tomorrow. And so it's really the final chance if to make any comment or I mean to share a thought. So I am volunteering here as the chair of the policy committee to work on any comment with the help from the pen the next hour so we can finalize. But I think Aidan wanted to here to raise some points and looking for some input. Yes, Aidan, please go ahead.
Hi, Ron, and thank you for that, Rafiq. So I wanted to go back to the comment on the new utility auction property. And this is the initial report of that cross-community working group. The comment is due tomorrow, and the comment is not yet ready to be submitted. And I was hoping that we might have a few more members of the policy committee on this call so that we could discuss the content of it. So the comment that was prepared for it by Austin was great. He's done a very good job at analyzing the report and putting it together. But I think there are a few areas where we don't actually have an NCHG position. And so I was hoping that we might be able to discuss them. So roughly a week, maybe a week and a half ago, I sent an email to the NCSG discuss list, hoping to get some feedback on three questions. But unfortunately, we didn't get as much input as I had hoped. But maybe I should just rewind a little bit to give a little background as to what this working group was doing and what this report is asking about. So this public comment was seeking input on the initial report of that working group. That working group had been developing a framework to disperse funds that had been generated from auctions of last resort in the initial round of new GTOD. And it's dealing with roughly $220 million, I believe, as of maybe we have to take away $30 million because that has been allocated to pay for the transition, but it's dealing with a sizable sum of money. And while this cross-community working group is not looking to allocate the funds itself, what it is doing is it's trying to develop that framework so that we know how to disperse them. And one of the areas where I think we don't have an NCHG position is on what would be the mechanism, the desired mechanism for giving away the money. And broadly, there were four proposals that were put forward in the initial report. One was that there could be just a new department. It could be, I think it was termed the ICANN Proceeds Allocation Department, and it would be dedicated to grant solicitation, implementation, and evaluation. In the NCHG comment that's being put forward, this is being put forward as sort of a preferred approach that the synergies could be achieved by ICANN doing this internally. I don't share that view myself, but that's something that we can discuss. Another mechanism would be that an internal ICANN department can be created. However, it would work in collaboration with an existing charitable organization to allow for the disbursement of funds. Another option would be a new independent foundation with its own board of directors, its own independent accountability structure. I happen to think that would be a better approach. And then there was a fourth mechanism. I can't quite remember what that was termed. It seemed to be really... It seemed that the working group itself was only recommending those first three options. There is some fourth mechanism that the working group had kind of discounted already. So I can't tell you what that is. So I was hoping that we might be able to discuss what we thought would be the best mechanism for distributing and dispersing the funds. Another question which becomes closely tied to that is, what is the ultimate goal? Is the ultimate goal to create a sustainable foundation that would be option C that exists for eternity? Or is the goal here just to give away the money over the next 10 years or maybe 5 years? And it does not need to be sort of a sustainable endeavor. So option C, the independent foundation, might have an endowment and it might be distributing a small percentage, a small sliver of the endowment every year, or it could be investing that and the interest is being returned for charitable purposes, whereas options A and B would be sort of just trying to disperse the funds as soon as possible in a reasonable way without necessarily seeking to preserve the capital. I think we need to discuss that because I think there could be some benefit to having an organization that was set up in perpetuity to advance the activities that support ICANN's mission. And then there is also the question about, should parts of the ICANN community be eligible to receive funding? In our comments, from memory, I think we were saying no, because we would want there to be funds should be going equally across the community, but I don't share that view myself. So I wanted to discuss that, and the reason why I don't share that view is not every part of the ICANN community needs funding. I think that there are parts of the community that are already very well resourced, and that this could be an opportunity to level the playing field slightly and to provide those parts of the community with less resources some assistance in advancing their goals that support ICANN's mission. But equally, I certainly see the danger of that and how that would be policed. And I suppose a fourth question is also about, in terms of identifying the accountability structure for dispersing the funds and the selection committees that would be dispersing funds, who would serve on those? Who would be the desired profile of individual who would be putting themselves forward to do this? So this comment that Austin has done a lot of work there, and he's done a very good job, but we do need to really hash out our position. There's been very little feedback from the policy committee on the mailing list. Austin drafted this comment 6, 7, 8 weeks ago. So it's really not cool that we've left it this late. But sadly, not much of the policy committee is even on this call, and maybe we can't even work it out now.
Thanks, Aidan. So, okay, I will send a reminder, last one. I thought I sent last week. We'll try to see if we can get any further input. But having myself going through the comment, I think for the option, not necessarily, I think, to take one position. I think all the options have their own merits, and it's good if maybe the group continue to investigate what's the best. So one way is maybe to leverage in terms of expertise or resources within ICANN, and so to have less administrative overhead. But the option to have an totally external structure, I think like a foundation that has its own merit, but it's also brings other issue and how to be implemented and so on. So I think here is to maybe to explore if how the fund can be used in the way that means not just to try to spend all, but it's maybe how to can make it more sure if it's the correct word, sustainable here, is the way that maybe invested or something like that. But I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on those matters, and this is maybe how why we couldn't get enough input. So in such situation, I think it's better to take more a prudent position and just try to explore more or get data. For the rest, I think in terms of accountability mechanism or asking for reporting and so on, I think what I just did is fine. And just raised one concern and I think this is something usual in the in NGO environment is if they have a lot of requirements for reporting and so on, what happens is kind of really side effect. They will spend much more time on those administrative matters than really doing what they got the funding for in first place. So we need to find a balance. It's not just to put more kind of reporting, ticking the box and so on, just to have the things that we are showing how we are spending the funding, but in practice it's just divert the attention from the real world. So we need to find a balance. Other than that, I think the other issues does the community should the community benefit from the funding? Myself, I'm quite ambivalent on this, because I have a concern is that the community needs never ends, and as the French say, the appetite come when eating. So it will expand and expand and expand, and we need to be careful here. So, but anyway, so we have this draft comment, and we share it again, and if people want to weigh in, it's the last opportunity to do so. We work with I think with Austin, who did a really good job in trying to cover the report and the recommendations, see how we can resolve this. The other comment is the consumer choice. So I'm not worried really about that one. It's just we are trying to repeat our concern previous recommendation. And this is at the level of the board approval, and they are looking for input. So it's just we want to clarify what were our concern, and I think Farrell did some comparison here between the previous comments submitted by NCAG and the final report. So, but anyway, if people want to share comment or input, they should do so. Yes, Farrell, please go ahead.
Hi, Rafiq. Hi, everyone. Farzan Badi speaking. So for the consumer review report, I believe that we need to – I think the deadline is coming up soon. It's just that we need to, as you said, we need to mention the improvements that have been made after our comments were filed, because the review team actually considered our comments, which is good of them. So I believe that in our comments, I have briefly reviewed the comments a couple of days ago, I believe. However, before we submit that, we need to kind of tone it down a little bit and just to express that these are like the changes that have been made, and these are like good changes, and the board knows our concern about generally content regulation and all sorts of things. So I think we are not. I think this is not like a vital issue to comment on or make strong. Very strong points about. We've been repeating them. Just we tone it down a little bit, and also tell the board what we think generally about the dangers of such reviews that on ITAM mission. Thank you.
Thanks for that. So, okay, I don't want to tell you here, but can you go again to the draft and propose any changes on that, what you suggested here? I mean, it should be just a small edit. It's not a substantial changes, but if you you can do it, please do so. I'm not just pushing you here. No pressure. Okay. Any further comment or question here? Okay. So as was suggested by Aiden, please do so. I mean, to share input or comments. It's really the last chance, and we need to submit in time. Don't get really. Have an extension here. So we will work at least at the policy committee to finalize in due time, but still opportunity to give input. So the two drafts are not long, and I think that they can be reviewed fairly quickly. So okay. Yeah, I think that's it for the public comments. So if you want to volunteer for the others that are still open, please feel free to reach me anytime, and I can add you to the drafting team. So there are two, just maybe for info, there are two public comments. One I mentioned previously, that's about the RTP policy status. As I said, that's a survey. It's for people who experience domain transfer. That's not really usual public comment. And there is another one, which is more about, it's not really something we need to cover in particular, because it's about some comment on the new EDRT service provider. So it's not really policy issue, but if someone feels that we need to cover, he or she or they are welcome to do so. Okay. So that's it. So let's go to the next agenda item, and that's the last one. So we have 10 minutes left in the call. So it's in any kind of other business, and I think here it's about the additional budget request. So this is the process we have every year to make any additional request to find some of our activities like capacity building and so on. And I think you may recall that we had one, for example, on the regarding the policy writing, that's one for NCAG, if not mistaken. And for NCAG, there was the one on facilitation and negotiation skills. So this is usually we submit this request, and this the process already started for this year. And it's more here about to try to get any suggestion or feedback or any proposal for request, and this will be managed by the financial committee, and I think also by Stephanie as the NCAG chair. So if you want to share any idea or proposal, please do so. Anyone? Okay, so that was that comment made. I think probably we can follow up in the mailing list to get input and proposal myself, but we can propose. We suggested many things before, so we have some history of many kind of requests and with so many kind of response for them. So we kind of build on that, but also we can try new things. But, just a caveat here, I think the amount that is allocated is not going to be that big, if we recall what happened in the current fiscal year. So. But anyway, you can make a proposal and trip. Okay, that was the last agenda item, and I see that Colin wants to add some any other business. Yes, Colin, please go ahead.
Great. Can you? If you can't hear me, then say something. Bruna and Louise and I organized a session at the IGF in Paris about human rights impact assessments, and we actually got a lot of positive responses from the community members that were in attendance. There were about 45 people from all across the community. And the suggestion was put forth, we look into doing a high-interest cross-community session in Kobe on human rights, but not just human rights impact assessments, but the different ways that rights come into play in the ICANN community. So this could look at, children's rights or the public safety working group, and Jorge Cancio from the International Human Rights Law Working Group was quite interested in taking this forward. So I'm not really exactly sure what needs or how you make a high-interest cross-community session. So I wanted to kind of throw that out there and see if any of you had any advice about how to proceed, or if this is something that we could take up within the NCSG, or what would be next steps if we wanted to continue exploring making this a reality. Thanks.
Thanks, Colin, for the update. Just to clarify here about the COPE meeting, so you are suggesting some let's say high interest or cross community session. So my understanding, I didn't attend the planning call, but understanding from the latest communique is only 3 slots, and there was already some suggestion about the topics, but I'm not following closely. So Stephanie probably has more information than I do, and I'm not sure if there will be opportunity or not to submit proposal, but yeah, maybe further than I said, it's better to liaise here. I think one concern that there was high interest session or cost session, that how to deal with all the proposal, and at the end how we finalize that the list of topics or the meeting. So. Okay, yes, Stephanie, please go ahead.
Yes, hi, Stephanie Perrin for the record. I have a terrible feeling that we might have missed the deadline for proposing a new HIT session, but I'll check it out. I really don't know. I haven't been on any of the planning calls, and I'll see if I can find the email. And other than that, I think the idea of a cross-community session might be easier, and we'll see what we have to do. Do you have other folks from other stakeholder groups who support this idea? Because that would probably be easier than us hammering away at it, you know, 2 or 3 others. That would be great.
Stephanie, I guess you can follow up with them later on. But I thought I saw Farzana in the queue and she disappeared. I hope she's not a ghost yet, but let's check. Farzana, you wanted to be in the queue?
Yes, yes. So Rafiq, I just wanted to say about the high interest session or the cross community sessions. It's important to know the difference. So high interest session is on behalf, can be on behalf of one group. one stakeholder group or advisory committee or whatever. The cross-community session has to be, in principle, it has to be in collaboration with other groups. So if, for example, if Colin's saying, like, Yach wants to co-organize, and I have to say that cross-community sessions are very normally politically charged, and it's very difficult to get, like, a word in, or, it sometimes gets hijacked in the middle, and another group just, like, puts, like, five representatives on the panel to talk about various things they want to talk about. So because we don't have criteria for we really don't have, like, set criteria, restrictive criteria for them, and I never managed to, during being chair, I never managed to win this battle. So I think Tatiana suggested that they have, like, the session as, like, a CCWP session, and I think Colin's session went pretty well last time. So I suggest that if the deadline is, considering this and discussing with Stephanie and the mailing list, if the deadline is passed or you see that there are, like, difficulties like space and time, it's better to be just a CCWP session, which is really it's not really that different from HIT or cross community, unless you don't want it to be conflicting with other sessions. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Farzan. Okay, I guess that there is some action items here, and then needs to follow up and to see how you can deal with this proposal and how you can organize a session. Probably high interest or close community is not that easy. And personally, as I organized it before, I have reservation regarding this session and all the burden and issue with that. So, but let's see how. Anyway, any other final comment or question? We have 2 minutes left on the call, and I hope that we finish in time. So, if we everyone to do something else during the day, and at least for those in Asia Pac, go to bed. So, any question, comment? I don't see any, and so thanks everyone for joining the call and participating. See you soon, and we'll continue our usual discussion in the mailing list. So bye bye.
Thank you everyone for attending the call. Goodbye.